dan gunan Afrika ni dah. Bye, MC. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am speaking this last so that we grab the attention of everybody. I think we can start. I know the Honorable Judge is on his way. But really not about the judge and his team today, although we had asked them to follow up on one or two matters. It's really about the rest of us. So I think we can start. The judge will join us. Just to refresh, last week we had an interaction with the inspecting judge and his team, and the topic of discussion was how effective is that unit in terms of its mandate and what needs to be done. We today asking the same question of yourself. How effective is that unit in terms of its mandate and what needs to be done? I think the end game would be after this consultation to perhaps try and influence the department and other stakeholders in terms of making it work, because we don't believe that you can have an institution as important as this just as a talk shop. We need to review the current powers, boundaries, and recommend changes if need be, or rectify or understand the current one if we think that they are existing. So that's really what it is. So we will ask you, either main to talk to them, what is it that you think needs to be done? We are expecting Mr. Carlson for you to talk to us about. You'll recall that we had two issues that we thought you must very briefly go and consider and come back and talk to us about. One is the welcome. You indicated to us that you had 214 officers on the ground, for want of a better word, 460,000 inmates. My own view is that that can't be an effective organization. I mean, some tell me that it's about 750 inmates per individual, and then over and above that, you give them limited time. I mean, I think there's a maximum number of hours that ICCVs can work. And each ICCV, if we just do the rough sums and everybody had at least one complaint, it would mean that there are 750 odd inmates that ICCV needs to look at. The question we're asking is that an ideal situation, or is that just something that is not possible? We say that because we have a similar type of setup with the legal aid board. It's just not possible for somebody that says he's going to look after the legal interests of inmates when you have one legal aid practitioner to 750 inmates, and we think that we're doing a service to them. So it's a similar type of thing. The second issue we wanted to talk to you about, and maybe this one, I'm raising them before the inspecting judge speaks so that you can touch on them as civil society organizations. The second one was, whilst we took a principle decision as the committee that we would not be vehemently opposed to parolees serving as ICCV, maybe you guys must make a comment on that, the advisability or otherwise. We had asked Mr. Carlson to give us the list of parolees that are serving as ICCVs so that we as well can satisfy ourselves that it's the route to go. So as civil society talk, maybe you should just talk on it very briefly. Is it advisable? Otherwise, we after last week, accepted the pleas of the inspectors that we should allow it to continue because there has not been any adverse reports to that. So if you could talk to that and we can finalize that one. So we have here the Civil Society Prison Reform Initiative. We have NICRO. We have Thus, detention with justice projects stronger gender justice network, who will be given maximum 20 minutes to do their thing, and we will then engage with it. The questions that really 5 minutes, could you give us your comments, Mr. Carter? And hopefully that would be the presentation. We also have Mr. Modise from the department as the acting COO. I guess Mr. Modise is an observer, but if there is a matter that you really feel that you wanted to comment on to give guidance, we're not going to say to you, you can't talk. But if there's something that is really critical, because we'll have our own opportunity at a future date to engage with it and come out of it, but we don't want to get you, if there's something that's glaringly inaccurate or missing, we certainly will afford that opportunity. And then to our colleagues from the media and everywhere else, welcome. I think you have the program in front of you. If not, they have members, so you know exactly who's going to kick off first. And after you've given you roughly 20 minutes, you can do it in shorter than that, please do so. So can we then, having said that, welcome everybody, and of course, since Betsy guys, I'm informed, will join us as we move on. Can we then hand over to Ms. Claire Bell, and immediately after you've done, we will ask questions of clarity and maybe some of your input and take it from there.
Okay. Firstly, apologies from Dr. Munson, who is currently abroad. He hoped he could be here, but unfortunately he couldn't. I think the initial starting point for these kinds of submissions is to point out why we would concern ourselves with the independence of a monitoring institution. And I think we think the answer to that is simply because it's potentially the most effective way of dealing with large-scale governance issues in prisons, which ultimately affect the rights of inmates. And we know that at this stage, all is not well within the DCA. The large number of complaints recorded by the IDs, particularly those in relation to assault, grievous body assault and torture, indicate that there are a wide range of fundamental problems with our prison system. Moreover, the range of persistent problems in DCA is relating to human rights violations and governance problems. Further affirms the position that the department, unfortunately, finds it difficult to take instructions and the advice that for assistance from external institutions such as ourselves and such as the portfolio committee. In this regard, we've noted there in paragraph 4 what the Dali Commission said about this. And I quote, "This is a bad state of affairs because it is this very attitude that discourages any input from people who might be experts in other areas which would be of assistance to the department. The department cannot operate in isolation. It is not Ireland, but an integral part of South African society. The manner in which it conducts its affairs has a bearing on the lives of all South Africans who expect the department to consult and interact with experts and relevant stakeholders to ensure that correctional facilities in our country are competent ones so that they can compare with the best in the world." It is CSPRI's general position that the DICS must promote transparency and accountability in the prison system by dealing with complaints promptly and effectively, and that the DCA be held accountable when it fails to take measures against frequently reported problems. Moreover, we find it unacceptable that the DCA's head office continues to ignore year after year the recommendations made by the inspecting judge. In consequence, the unavoidable conclusion is that the rank and file of the department continues to act with impunity. We think that effective evidence is furthermore established by results that are objective and founded in law, and in this instance, results that are actively improve the situation of prisoners and protect the rights that they hold and are enumerated in the Constitution and the Correctional Services Act. It is therefore a function also of knowledge and expertise, and an oversight institution such as the DICS needs to demonstrate this in a tangible way and provide intellectual leadership on human rights in the prison system. And so we note with approval that the DICS in their latest 2011-2012 annual report reflects on its past discussions on its independence and noted that it makes the chief directorate of the independent DICS investigative directorate in response to this committee's suggestion that it do so. The report also states that the DICS will embark on further engagement with the Department of Public Service and Administration regarding this, and certainly we are supportive of that engagement. These submissions spell out some of the key functions of oversight bodies within other jurisdictions, and we've taken the opportunity to outline Canada and the UK. We think that particularly their legislative and policy arrangements are particularly useful simply because they have similar governance setups, and I think we could learn a lot from their legislative description of the powers and functions of their own inspectorate institutions. I'm not going to detail them in this verbal admission, but they are there, and certainly if the committee wanted more detail on them, we would be happy to provide more research on the topic. When analysing what independently means for monitoring institutions, we've taken our cue from the words of the Constitutional Court, where they tackled the issue in the new National Party on Africa case, and many of those words were reinforced by the recent decision of Genesis. In that case, they said that that case dealt with the Independent Electoral Commission, in many ways very similar to the intentions, the objectives of which are in very many ways similar to the objectives of this. But that party state that for independence to be meaningful, such institutions need both financial and administrative independence. And what is financial independence? Well, essentially it requires that an organization be in a position to acquire funds when they're necessary to perform its own statutory duties. In the new National Party case, the Constitutional Court noted that an arrangement whereby a government department makes funds available from its own budget to a public entity for the performance of certain functions, that must be fundamentally inappropriate when applied to independent institutions. Accordingly, the court states that it was for Parliament and not the executive arm of government to provide for such funding. And although Section 81 of the Correctional Services Act guarantees independence of the judicial inspectorate, Section 91 states that it is the department that is responsible for the expenses of the check. Certainly the esteem in which judges are held brings a credibility and a measure of independence to the office, but this is necessarily fragile for it is reliant on an individual and not the institution itself. When we look at administrative independence, it is something which case law and commentators have said that implies control over matters directly connected with that control, with the functions that such institution must perform. We don't have a huge insight into the working of the judicial inspectorate when it comes to those administrative functions, but certainly it relies on DCS boards, suspects, numbers, records, etc., and it would be indeed beneficial if they had, obviously with a concomitant financial report, their own resources to overlook those particular functions themselves. We also looked through a 2000 report, an extensive research report on the Office of the Judicial Inspectorate, which was based on interviews with its own staff, members of civil society, Chapter 9 institutions, and members of DCS and MPs. You'll see that in paragraph 14, that there was a consistent concern about the apparent sort of inter-arrangements between IBs and their purported closeness with DCS officials. Obviously, this is very difficult to comment on at this stage. All we can say is that it was a concern, and that anecdotally it is a concern raised by prisoners themselves, and certainly has an implication on the independence of the judicial inspectorate. I've also noted there in paragraph 16 a number of key provisions in the IPID Act, which I think the judicial inspectorate, with the DCA, the Correctional Services Act, should ultimately emulate. There are certain things which it shouldn't, which we agree would be wishful thinking in terms of its policing powers, powers of search and seizure, etc. Certainly in terms of its independence and the directness with which it can make recommendations to policing and prosecuting authorities is, again, something which we hope the DIC will ultimately emulate. I'm going to look now at the complaint system and the nature of the powers of the inspectorate. As stated in the Act, the inspector judge, besides being empowered to visit an inspector prison, is also empowered to deal with a complaint referred to him or her from the national commissioner, the minister, the business committee, or an IB himself. Of course, when holding such an inquiry, he has the necessary powers in terms of the commission act. But in the event that a serious incident occurs involving the injury, assault, or death of the prisoner, the inspecting judge is notified via the mandatory reporting system and thereafter empowered to deal with such a complaint, but may or not require investigative processes set out in the Commissions Act. Ultimately, a finding by the judge that the criminal liability of the department or a member of the department to be investigated by the staff and the NPA would be conveyed in the form of recommendation to UCS itself and then ultimately to the committee. You notice that by contrast, that the language in the Correctional Services Act is not mandatory. In contrast to the ICED Act, which whose language is mandatory in respect of investigation and recommendation, the language in relation to the judicial inspection in the Correctional Services Act is not. So the ICED Act stipulates that any death in police custody, death as a result of police action or any complaint, etc., must be investigated by the directorate. Furthermore, the ICED and the executive director must refer criminal offences revealed as a result of such investigation to the National Prosecuting Authority for Investigation and notify the Minister of such a referral. That is something which, unfortunately, the Correctional Services Act doesn't have, and we think it should, given the nature and extent of the types of assault reports, not to mention it, the frequency thereof, that such mandatory investigations would indeed be necessary. Many of the complaints received by inspectorates concern serious human rights violations such as assault, torture, and attempted murder. And the 2009 report just provided more details, has been reporting a more detailed pattern on unnatural deaths, etc. In respect of criminal investigations and disciplinary proceedings, the 2010-2011 report indicated that a number of homicide cases that year had not been finalized. Inspectorates followed up on these cases. Staff, unfortunately, had closed the file in the majority of those cases, and the matters had been referred to the NPA. They had returned with certification not to prosecute. Which means that over the last few years, there has not been one single criminal prosecution of a departmental official implicated in the death of a prisoner. In November 2011, we submitted to this committee that even though the descriptions provided in the JICS annual report were brief, a number of characteristics are clear, particularly when officials are implicated in the death of prisoners. They were such deaths were always the result of, often the result of aggravated assault, inflicted either as punishment or in retaliation for an assault on an official, and were committed by groups, officials, or single prisoners. In several of the cases, it was noted that the assault continued after the prisoner had been subdued or the situation had stabilized, and therefore had exceeded the use of minimum force requirements outlined in a very detailed fashion in the Correctional Services Act. In light of this, the results of investigations reported in the latest report offer little reason for optimism, we think, but rather the events of the prevailing lack of criminal investigations serve to perpetuate the unfortunate impunity of these officials. Certainly, while there may be legitimate reasons why the Director of Public Prosecution would decline to prosecute, the lack of transparency in this regard does little to support the accountability of the institution and the role of checks. Such issues are, of course, not limited to death and custody, but also relevant in respect of assault. But we also think the lack of transparency is also problematic in respect of investigations purportedly undertaken by the department and that into natural deaths. Given the clear duties, indeed the lack of prosecutions indicates that such investigations are not particularly thorough or sufficiently independent. And importantly, these appear to be notoriously covert, and the only evidence that comes into the public domain is after such a time as an annual report is published for journalistic information, etc. By virtue of the fact that an alleged perpetrator is an employee of the department, the department is implicated because the death in question indicates a material finding, failing, or neglect on the part of the department to provide fair custody and uphold rights of life. Although there is little recent information on the role of staff in investigating crime committed in prison, the Dali Commission's final report made a number of observations and identified three impediments to effective investigation: continuous interference by DCS staff, investigations not being done in confidence due to the presence of DCS officials, the knowledge of the prisoner and the complaint, and the intimidation and victims by DCS officials. And so we conclude that unless drastic changes are made to the current investigative regime, it is unlikely that any more successful investigations and prosecutions will take place. And it is ultimately in the interest of the department that deaths and assaults are properly investigated and the perpetrators are criminally liable. Object has a limited role when it comes to the investigation of deaths and assaults in prison. The Act states that any death in prison must be reported forthwith to the inspecting judge, who may carry out or instruct the commissioners to conduct an inquiry. Now, although the inspecting judge may hold an inquiry for purposes of conducting his own investigation, The OCM only deal with complaints referred to the National Commissioner's Visitors Committee for the Standards Urgence and IV. We recommend accordingly that this faltering process be removed in the legislation and that the committee conduct its own investigation into the problem and ultimately should call on the NPA staff, the department and the DEC to provide clarity on how investigations are being conducted, the problem investigations, how decisions to prosecute are or are not made, and the current lack of criminal prosecutions implicating DCS officials in the deaths of prisoners. In addition, we recommend that the following legislative amendments be considered by this committee. That upon receipt of reports of death, incidences of serious assault and torture, the DEC conduct its own investigation into the incident and report its findings to the staff directly, along with its recommendation as to whether the matter should be criminally investigated by the staff. That the department be prohibited from conducting any internal investigations into death and assault until the DEC and staff have completed their own investigations. That DEC has the authority to provisionally suspend DCS officials or has the authority to instruct the commissioner to suspend officials implicated in an ongoing investigation. That the DEC publish the findings and recommendations of every single one of its investigations into death, serious assault, and torture, and that the results in investigations and prosecutions be published annually by DEC, including the reasons why DPP have declined to prosecute where such a decision was made. That the DCS National Commissioner explains on an annual basis what actions it has taken to implement the recommendations of the DEC, or alternatively, the reasons why it was decided not to implement one or more of the recommendations. Ultimately, what we suggested would necessarily imply a legislative amendment, ultimately some sort of policy arrangement. And that is where I think we're going to leave. Thank you, Chair.
Marcella, thank you very much. Maybe we should allow the other two to give their input and have a comprehensive discussion. I'm not sure if you want the discussion now, because I think the recommendations that came out are, for me, very instructive, and we need to debate them. But it's no use debating yours, and then somebody else comes with another one. Let's take all of them. But can I also appeal to our other presenters? Rather than give us a long story, if you could zoom into what you think are the recommendations and the shortcomings so that we have an adult discussion around it. I think Mr. Allard has given us on page 10 and 11 quite a few of them. As part of your input, maybe you can start disputing or whatever those recommendations and we'll take it from there, because I think that's what we're going to focus on. How do we strengthen the legislation? How do we strengthen the arm of chicks, or how do we retain the status quo? So if we could ask members then to give us their input and then committee just to note their points, and we'll open it up for a broader discussion later on. Can we move on to the next presentation?
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Before I start, I just want to thank the committee for the leadership in opening up this issue and taking the issue of external prison oversight seriously. I think as NICRO we support that, and we believe that the role of judicial inspectors is a critical one, especially around independent and impartial investigation of prison. And we hope that through this deliberation we can deal with some of the challenges. But just to look at in terms of recommendations and what the core our submission focuses on, we also are looking at accountability and transparency. I think accountability, particularly with regard to recommendations, and what happens when recommendations are not implemented. And I think Claire pointed out the DCS's response in this regard. And I think one of our recommendations are really about binding recommendations and also in terms of how one monitors recommendations. I think I've also been reading a lot about international best practice, and there are committees that can be established within the DCS that would look at recommendations and report on recommendations, that would prioritize recommendations made and decide how you're going to implement it or not, and to be able to report to this committee. Also, in terms of monitoring recommendations, what we are recommending is that in the reporting by DEC, that there be more reference to recommendations. I did send an example of an inspected report from the UK. I think it's a thing that it's too big to print now. So I would really advise one looks at the reporting structure. NICRO's above our recommendation now here as well, we're also going to look at reporting, as I think is critical when it comes to monitoring. and in the UK and in the Netherlands, they look specifically at for prison monitoring. They get thematic reports. I think time and time again, CSPLI have talked about thematic reports. Currently, our reporting is restricted to quarterly and to annual reports. But the actual reporting helps us give a clearer idea of what we're looking at. And in this report, what they do is they have a whole list, a section on recommendations, and they would actually report on the status. They would highlight what the recommendation was, and then they would say whether it was achieved or not achieved. And they would say, in this report, we're repeating the recommendation. It makes it clearer for the committee to follow regarding how, you know, over the years, what the response of the DCS has been. But one would need to also decide whether one can adjust legislation around how one, you know, looks at these recommendations and also binding issues around things as well. Our presentation has looked at the accountability, the improving investigations, which we agree, increasing powers to enforce recommendations, and then also a review of the independent correctional center visitor model. Now, we all know the issue. I think this will also support of, like, CSCRI around independence of the judicial inspectors. We do agree that currently independence is compromised because of the alignment and close linkages with the DCS. We also agree the issue around financial and administrative issues where the budget should actually not be within the DCS. And if we know now that the JICS is speaking with the independent police directorate, and there are differences in how that directorate is run, and they get their budget directly from Parliament and not through any through the police. So I think it's something that it can be done, where that budget doesn't have to come to the DCS. Also, I mean, I'm not sure if this is, in the legislation it talks about the president appointing the inspecting judge, but I mean, we do know that the Minister of Correctional Services is involved in that process, which obviously compromises independence and impartiality. I mean, how do you get someone who's appointing someone to oversee their department kind of thing? So that changes really have to be made with regard to that kind of structure. Also with regard to accountability, I think Lucas said the previous year as well, the state must be willing to restrain itself by creating and sustaining independent public institutions to oversee its actions, demand explanation, and when circumstances warrant, impose penalties on the government for improper and illegal activity. And I think time and time again, we have recommendations before the DCS. We see their response. Also to recognize that the external oversight is not a hostile mechanism. It's supposed to be towards improving operations, towards improving conditions in prisons. But we also struggle with the response of the DCS. Claire mentioned the issue of transparency. That's a thing not open. It's not about criticism. I think we're all working towards the same goal. And their responses we find defensive and in trying to hide things. We should really, and I think it's been a struggle in this department. I mean, we're all working towards goals. It's not about us coming here to criticize the DCS or anybody. We all want to strengthen the issue of oversight in this country and prison, and that they will be run properly and rights of people taken care of. So as we all recognize, and I think there's been attitudinal change on behalf of the DCS and a culture of transparency and openness that still needs to be achieved. And I think if we don't get that cooperation right, we're going to struggle with regard to that. But also, there is no sanctions. If they do not implement the recommendations, I mean, what are the sanctions and penalties? That is why there's a culture of impunity within the DCS. There is no sanctions, and as Pierre pointed out, even with regard to the ethical, criminal prosecutions are not even the sanctions that impose. So the department is really allowed to, I've been sitting here some time and time again, and we've been putting recommendations, and they extend it. But I just don't think it's sufficient to ensure accountability and transparency, which is key to oversight, and answerability and controllability. So transparency and answerability will have little meaning if there are no mechanisms in place to sanction actions and decisions in contravention of given mandate. The accountability mechanisms must therefore be able to exercise control over institutions they are overseeing, and failure to hold governments and individuals accountable create conditions for impunity to exist. With regard, furthermore, about the independence, if there's any other issues, I think Claire mentioned the financial and administrative issue. I think we agreed for Parliament and not the executive arm of government to provide for funding, that they must be paid from the DCF budget. I think she's mentioned the legislative changes on page 3, which I won't go into. The DIC did meet with the Independent Police Directors. They did look at what a complete model of independence would look at. There are challenges. They talked about establishing an internal audit function, formalized equity plans, but we know that to do all of these is capacity issues. But I think we need to seriously look at how they would look at that and then basically what resources they would need to do that. Another interesting thing we found with regard to ICCVs and individual complaints and inspections. In other countries, these functions, like in the UK, is separated. And the Jali Commission, their recommendation previously, talked about the establishment of a prison ombudsman. Now, the prison ombudsman in the UK, they deal specifically with individual complaints from inmates, families, visitors, or stakeholders around prisons. And the inspectors, as it's rightfully called, inspectors, deals with specifically inspections and monitoring. And they don't kind of join the two like we have. And I don't know how practical it is, but I'm just putting it out there in terms of separation of this kind of function. And that if we have a prison ombudsman, the ICCV system would fall under them, and the inspection, we can really strengthen the quality of inspections by the inspector. But obviously, we have to obviously discuss the practicality of that. Investigations, I think we agree with CSPRI that investigations need to be strengthened. I also looked at international models, and their inspections, besides improving the powers of investigation, which is critical, I think she mentioned it, they have really structured inspections. They have inspection teams, and they have an inspection chief inspector of prisons and a deputy inspector of prisons, and then they have a team teams. A team A with one leader and four inspectors, and they go into to look at male prisoners. Or another team goes to look at issues of juveniles. Or they have specialist teams, and in that way they understand and they more thoroughly can investigate issues. But also something else to consider in terms of making recommendations to them how they structure their investigation teams and inspection teams. Also, there's standards. In other parts of the world, they establish criteria for inspection. So there's particular standards, and I mean there's international instruments around inspections. There's also our own legislation. And basically, the way they report is according to what the legislative mandate requires. And basically, there's inspection criteria, and then when they report to you, they would report in terms of based on the criteria they use to inspect the prison. So it's more focused inspections, and we can clearly see the progress with regard to these. And we would really recommend that the inspector publish standards and inspection criteria against which they would inspect prisons. And then was the recommendation to report for prison, which I think is important, because we lump everything, and we really don't know. It's also about particular prisons and how they are implementing a particular correctional facility. It would be nice to see how particular prisons and which is the best performing prisons. At the moment, the issues are so cloudy that you can't really tell, and everyone is not together in the same the Jali Commission were extremely critical of DICS regarding the removal of the investigation of corruption and dishonest practices from this mandate. And I think Lucas has also previously put this issue forward where it needs further review. The IPD, I think we agree with Claire when, and I don't know if she said this, to have the same investigative powers as the IPD, particularly where it pertains to deaths and custodies and allegations of torture, and that the DCA is not permitted to conduct investigations of matters until the DCA completes the investigation. So we're also supportive of what she said, and the legislative changes for the inspecting that to notify directly the staff and NPAs, where there is a criminal charge that should be laid against members of the department, so we are actually agreeing with that. and that the results of investigations and prosecutions be published annually by DICS, including the reason why the DPA, FPS, and declined to prosecute. Another thing that doesn't happen is there is a legislative mandate to do announced and unannounced prison visits. But DICS does not do unannounced prison visits, which is something that is needed. I mean, international standards show that announced and unannounced prison visits is essential to ensure transparent and accountable planning of prisons, and it complies with human rights standards. In the UK as well, they have an inspection manual with criteria. So I think we need to organize ourselves. But Nicola is focusing a lot on the reporting and structuring of reports so that we can better monitor things. Okay, if you have threat powers to enforce recommendations, they are able to enforce recommendations. DICS is not mandated to make binding decisions on the DCS. The commission also criticized the inspectorate, this is the Jali Commission, for not using its investigative powers and holding hearings, public hearings, as it is mandated to do in Section 95. In the Netherlands, the Complaints Committee is mandated to make binding decisions on the prison service. Okay, DICS also needs to strengthen the reporting mechanisms with regard to unresolved complaints that they themselves have mentioned before. And with regard to independent community correction visitors, obviously we believe that they've had added great value to increase transparency, and there's huge amounts of complaints, over 400,000 complaints that are taken. But there are also a lot of complaints that are taken that are not illegible. I mean, we know that the ICCV system, there's an internal complaints mechanism, and then the ICCV system is supposed to, if that system is not working, they deal with the unresolved issues. But there's inadequacies with regard to that system, and I think Claire mentioned the issue around independence, that because of the alignment of the DCS, it causes problems, but there's also the eligibility issues. So there's a large amount of complaints to get which I think could have been resolved within the ECS or something of that sort. And in other parts of the country, they also consider using a telephone service to screen calls, and then if there's a necessity for face-to-face visits, then the lay visitors or inspectors can visit. So that's also something that is, just prevents the huge amount of time that is spent on some complaints that can easily be resolved with a telephone call. Clarification of role, I think time and time again we've seen that the role of ICCVs need to be clarified. NICRO feels that one of the challenges is the relationship between the ICCV and the head of centers. And we really feel that it possibly could be an issue of, I don't know if it's ability to influence the decision makers, but or the authority, not having sufficient authority to speak with head of centers. And I'm not sure how that relationship is, but unless that issue is looked at, and in terms of the competencies and the job specifications of the people we appoint, it may be problematic. So what we're suggesting is that they may be considering a different person specification that allows for competencies and the ability to command attention and influence authority. Okay, and I think previously there was also a recommendation around feedback to prisoners. We often hear that the ICCV has interviewed an inmate and not gotten back to them. So I think there was a recommendation made in 2004 really by Gail Messi when she looked at the IPV system. And the recommendation was there to develop a feedback to prisoner mechanism. And I'm not sure if that was done with regard to how a time frame as to when they would get back to prisoners. And I think that builds confidence in the judicial inspectors and the ICCV system as well. With regard to human resource capacity, I think we did mention that the issue of 850 in Gauteng, the ratio of 850 inmates to one ICCV. And I think that's, and also in regard to the time that's spent in, we agree with that. So consideration needs to be given to either we appoint more ICCVs or one looks at increasing the time that they do spend in correctional facilities. Okay, I'm nearly there. with regard to this final recommendation. While elements of perceived independent inspection monitoring of prisons are currently in place in South Africa, we do feel that the system is falling short by what is required by international standards. And I think the recommendations we made about inspection manuals, inspection criteria, reporting, binding recommendations, all of that is what's up there in terms of best practice in the international arena. And we agree that you should strengthen the independence of the DICS, the investigative role be strengthened and binding recommendations be implemented. We also are recommending the establishment of the separate prison ombudsman, which deals with individual complaints and that the DICS deal with the investigation specifically, and boost the investigation inspection by considering those specialist inspector teams that could even look at specific issues like remand, detention, or juvenile. And obviously get a more deepened knowledge of specific issues within the system. More cooperation between DCS and DICS can achieve a lot. And we did mention the DCS's attitude, and we hope that can be more cooperative in future. The binding mechanism was also recommended, and that a DCS team be established that will rationalize and prioritize the recommendations from external reviews and monitoring bodies in particular. We mentioned the publication of inspection standards and performance indicators that will constitute the best benchmark for the assessment of certain conditions and subsequent reports, and that this be introduced in legislation to put the standards on the statutory foot. I think there's anything else. I think I've mentioned the issue of reporting that besides the quarterly report and the annual report, I think CSRI also talked about thematic reports before, and we are also introducing the issue of individual prison reports, particularly those prisons where it's problematic and inspections have been conducted. The strengthened mechanisms for the issue around death in custody, and we'd just like to support the issue about fostering a culture of transparency and openness within the DCS.
Thank you, Vanessa. Ms. Keane?
Sorry, I'm Sasha here from Dr. Center International, and Emily from Songke and I are going to co-present on behalf of the BITS Justice Project, Songke Gender Justice, and Dr. Center International. So to start off, I just want to thank on behalf of the three organizations, the Portfolio Committee, BITS Opportunity, and the Judicial Inspectorate. Also for raising a discussion in its own annual report and inviting comments and debate on how it can be strengthened. I think also as we think back to where we come from, it's important to recognize how far prison oversight has come in South Africa since the late 1990s and the DICS establishment. And it's really contributed to transparency and to more effective handling of inmates' complaints. However, I think the process to date, and as colleagues from other organizations have pointed out, has revealed some really important lessons and showed up shortcomings in the current state of affairs, providing pointers for how we can further strengthen as we move forward. So primarily, the VITS Justice Project, Not Agenda Justice, and Just Detention International are similarly concerned that DICS lacks adequate independence on an operational level, financial level, and in terms of how it is perceived by other stakeholders, and that it lacks independence from the Department of Correctional Services. We're concerned as well that it is not sufficiently empowered to carry out its mandate to help protect inmates' human rights. And we're just going to summarize our key recommendations, many of which overlap with the SPRI and NICROs, and Emily's going to kick us off there.
Thanks to everyone for this opportunity, and it's good to hear you again. I'm going to discuss our key concerns around independence and the current powers, and then Sasha will look at the other issues. I'll try to avoid duplication of what other people have said. So just note that the optional protocol to put on the Convention Against Torture, it's been signed, as far as I'm aware. I don't think it's been ratified yet. But once it is, it calls for a national preventative mechanism to be created. And DICS foreseeably would have a big role to play in that national preventative mechanism. But the convention, the optional protocol, requires the DICS entities involved with the National Preventative Mechanism to have functional independence. And their guidance on what that means is it has to be limited opportunity for political interference in its mandate, its operations, and its funding. And it also must have perceived independence from the public's point of view. The United Nations Paris Principles, which guide national human rights bodies, also underscores that financial independence is a prerequisite for any sort of operational decision-making autonomy. And so I think it's really something that must be put in place at a minimum. So in addition to the recommendations that others have made, we recommend that the committee consider removing any ability for DCF leadership to exert political influence over any appointments in the judicial sector. For example, when appointing to certain positions, it requires that the National Commissioner of Correctional Services be consulted. Obviously, this type of provision should be removed. Echoing Vanessa's concerns on the appointment of the expecting judge, we agree with what she said and also just want to suggest consideration of evolving the Judicial Services Commission in the nomination and appointment process of the expecting judge. As a retired judge of the High Court, the JSC would have a clear role because obviously they regulate and all of that, govern judges in South Africa. And they would be much better suited to vet any sort of nominees. We would also like to see greater stakeholder consultation or engagement in the process. So like with the Human Rights Commission and the Commission for Gender Equality, there's an opportunity for interested stakeholders to make nominations or make submissions on the process. Obviously, these are just to give our input, so we would appreciate that kind of suggestion as well. Concerning the Dixon mandate, our recommendations center around the challenges it faces in executing its mandate right now, as well as our questions around its current level of effectiveness. And this comes from anecdotal information and previous reports that have raised questions around inmates' perceptions of ICCVs in particular. They question whether there's confidentiality, ICCVs and DICS's credibility is damaged because of the long protracted resolution processes and sometimes the non-action that results from what they believe are legitimate complaints. And also their perception that ICCVs consequently have no authority. We also think that DICS's limited scope of powers is intertwined with the weak independence that it currently has. This is evidence from the prior removal of the power, DICS's power to investigate corrupt and dishonest practices, which was done at the behest of the then inspecting judge. She thought it would compromise its relationship with DCS, so they didn't feel like they were sufficiently independent to be able to criticize DCS in regards to corruption and dishonest practices. This clearly showing them to try and get these challenges. It could also link to the weak public awareness about DICS. As previously mentioned, financial independence is a prerequisite in order to speak freely and report freely for DICS. At present, they do table the reports in Parliament. They post them on the website, but there's no press release. There's no public engagement about this finding. Those are the types of actions that you see coming from the Human Rights Commission, from the Commission for Gender Equality, from the Public Protector, that ensure the public is aware about the rights issues they're dealing with. And I think would be critical to improve public understanding about the challenges that the department is facing. We also are concerned about when DICS is hampered by DCS's regulations. So at present, the Correctional Services Act gives the minister the power to create regulations about visits, death, processes of complaints, the reporting procedure where force is used. Obviously, all these things would impact how DICS also operates with its complaint system. And the CSA does not currently require any sort of consultation process with the inspecting judge or DICS when the minister is creating such regulations. So we think the Correctional Services Act should clearly state that the minister is not empowered to make regulations concerning DICS, and that when it does make these types of regulations, it must consult with DICS to get input. Now, in addition to the CR's recommendations, ask the committee to look at the IDIB as an example, we also recommend considering of making it an offense to hinder or obstruct work of six or to subordinate mandatory reports. So that's something that was changed with the creation of the IPID because of the lack of reporting and cooperation between FATF and the ICD before. So we make a similar recommendation here. We also note that the six current reports sometimes miss known systemic challenges, and so we think that the list of issues that the DICS makes mandatory reports on should be expanded to pick up some of these systemic issues that we know exist but we don't have good information on. So a key concern to us is adding sexual abuse to this list. So prison rape is not separated from general assault. We know, as we've said here a few times, there's a strong critical silence around prisoner rape. The complaint system, as they currently exist, discourage or hamper reporting. That's less important to specifically require that that issue be mandatorily reported on. We readily agree with the recommendations that the others have made around investigations. We just want to, again, specify that sexual abuse also be considered, as well as other potentially other known systemic issues such as contributing to the death of inmates, such as HIV, TB, or other failure to deliver on certain health issues, things like that. So we think that's important. And then in terms of the extra investigative powers it's given, we have the opinion that it shouldn't be given any sort of police-type investigative powers, but that maybe we should take a page from the Human Rights Commission, for example, which has its own types of investigative powers. It can subpoena, it can call them hearings. It's required by law to cooperate with these investigations. It can make binding decisions. It is also specifically mandated to refer to the FAPS and NPA, any sort of criminal findings that it has. So as a watchdog body, we're thinking that might be something interesting to look at with the committee. Because of all the balances of cooperation, because of the unknown, we don't know why the FAPS and the NPA is closing its dockets on these certain criminal cases that the FBI has highlighted. And so we think maybe mandating some sort of cooperation, or at least mandating the creation of regulations or policies that would guide this cooperation, that would guide the referral system, mandating that within the Correctional Services Act might help improve this and assist these role players to work together. And then that's what Vanessa said, and we think it's not just about, you know, having good oversight and transparency. Of course, it's not just about criticism, it's about improved public understanding of the challenges facing DCS. And then our opinion is that it might be actually good for DCS because it sets realistic expectations in the public within role players about the challenges they're facing, and better equip the department and stakeholders to come up with realistic solutions as well. And then I'm just going to respond to, I think, your request, Mr. Smith, about our opinions on parolees serving as ICCVs. I think just speaking for Donkey on this part, I don't know if Sasha will agree, but I think with wrong training and proper vetting, it's not necessarily a problem to have parolees or inmates who finish their parole serving as ICCV. They're very quick to identify issues and understand the complete system. Sponsors does work with ex-offenders and parolees in a program within DCS centered, and often inmates that are able to relate to them, they have greater credibility with inmates already. So long as they're properly vetted, they have a proper background check, they're on track with their rehabilitation, not going to be appointed to a center in which they're incarcerated, our opinion is that it wouldn't be a problem necessarily. And then just in regards to, I think Vanessa's comment about just not making an announced visit, I think does make unannounced visits on a frequent basis, but it's not necessarily explicitly empowered to do so in the CSA. So it's not disempowered from doing that, but it's not empowered. So they do these unannounced visits. So maybe clarification on that power in the CSA would assist them as well. Thanks.
I think Emily's covered basically everything. There are just a couple more to add, and the one is around inmate awareness of the ICCVs and training of the ICCVs. I think many of the inmates we come across, even those who've been in the system for a long time and are quite senior and relatively sort of sorted out in the system, don't necessarily know of the ICCVs at all or the existence of the judicial inspectorate. And so we would want to see all sentenced and unsentenced inmates informed about their right to have access to ICCVs. And I think the challenge there is for DICS to identify the issues that are hindering inmates from accessing the ICCVs. Also, and this touches on the thematic issues that both Vanessa and Emily spoke of, we would like to see ICCVs being trained on certain issues that we know are systemic in the system, such as sexual abuse, HIV, TB, but aren't coming out through complaint. For a range of reasons, these are often issues that are not easily spoken about or visible. So we need to see our ICCVs being trained on these issues to understand them so that they're in a better position to pick up on them and to monitor how they're being dealt with. Also, we think, the ICCVs have unprecedented and incredible access to a system that is otherwise relatively closed and opaque. And we would like to see this more being made out of this access, especially when there are critical issues on which we require information in order to address the situation in our correctional centres. So, for example, we would like to see the judicial inspectors being mandated to conduct thematic research, something that Vanessa also mentioned, on the challenges in correctional centres, and make these available in public reports. I think beyond, certainly the quarterly reports are a very welcome addition to reporting objects. But beyond reports to the portfolio committee and posting on the website, we don't see in the public realm much of the very important information that DICS has access to. And the DICS is also not barred from interacting with the media or ensuring widespread dissemination on its public documents and reports, although it hasn't to date made use of this opportunity. I think also while visitors to communities provide a forum for potential community engagement, a really important one, if we're to see our broader society become more familiar with the challenges in our prisons, there is very little public awareness about DICS as an institution and about the vital information on which it reports. So this could be addressed, for example, as mentioned, through the widespread dissemination of reports and findings and through interaction with the press. I think lastly, we would say that given its performance to date and its relatively small budget comparative to other similar oversight bodies, this has really done well in terms of its impact. But it's clear that if we're to see true independence and its powers increased in ways that we would like it to, as well as its ability to better perform on its current activities, we need to see a substantial increase in budgets and personnel for this. So thanks again on behalf of this project, Songhe and this project international.
Thank you very much, Sasa, and to Claire and Vanessa and Emily, thank you very much. We want to open it up for discussion, but if I could appeal to members, I was trying to summarize. You know, I think rather than directing questions back at the presenters, which we can do, I really think we must comment on from our side what we think. And I think there are about 10 issues that I'd want to raise over and above what everybody else going to raise. I really think the first one is we must comment on the real independence. Our view of what is the real independence of this institution. There's talk about functional, administrative, financial. Let us comment on this one. I really think the other one is also the real power. Investigate. Send that investigation to SAPS and to the NPA. Publish its findings and recommendations, because that's the real power that I think that we are hearing coming out from the presenters. an obstacle, because clearly there are obstacles or perceived obstacles from DCS, either restriction of finances or access to facilities. So the real power of DCS. I think also there's the whole issue around the appointment of the inspecting guard, the role of the minister, the role of public and so on, the president and so on. I think we must have some discussion about it. As MPs, I think we should. There's also the whole issue around the current role of DCS to do its own investigation. And what does that mean for independence? If DCS are going to be investigating themselves, I think that is the whole logic about the ISIS, that the police were investigating the police. And why do we continue to have DCS investigating itself? And should that not be something that DCS should not be doing and inspecting judge should be doing? I want us to have some sort of discussion around that issue. The other issue that maybe didn't come out, but I picked it up as you were talking about it, and maybe we should talk about it, is the broadness of the mandate of DICS versus FOCUS. You know, I was just trying to list. DICS goes and investigates food and nutrition or lack thereof, investigates medication and health, it investigates the whole issue of segregation, those type of things, it investigates transfers, voluntary or otherwise, assaults and murders, abuse, segregation of youth and children, corruption. And last week we heard the inspecting judge saying that maybe these people need training on legal. Is their mandate not just too broad for it to be productive? Or should we not be saying let's focus it rather and let them focus on it? I think it's something you're talking about, Vanessa, maybe the ombudsman versus the whatever. I don't know, we must discuss it, because currently they do everything. Anything that is a problem, DICS should be doing. They don't even have the capacity to interpret some of these things according to their own presentation, but we expect them to investigate corruption, investigate sexual assault, investigate murder. I don't know. Maybe we should just talk about their mandate. The broadness versus maybe a focus part of it. And the final issue, once we did raise many others, like the geographic location and so on, I think the final question that we must talk about, members, is after having heard all this, is there a need for a possible separate DICS Act? Because currently we're saying that it's within the correctional services and in itself with a restriction. Is there a need now for us to say that DICS must have its own act? In other words, extract it from the correctional services act and have it. Because that's ultimately what we, as a committee, must discuss and take to the Mauritius and to the ministers of this world, that if out of all this, you cannot fix it by kind of beating the act. Maybe it needs a standalone act. Or if we can handle these things. So I'd rather we have that discussion than to say, what did you mean when you were saying act? Because it's pretty clear what they were saying. So if members in their interaction could just talk on those matters, we'll try and capture them as accurately as possible to send it and give it back to you and say, out of your discussion, these are the kinds of things that are coming out. Let's formulate a report that we submit to Parliament, Parliament, and everybody else. Inspector Judge, welcome. We did hear that you're training us late. Once we've had that discussion, we will come back to you on issues that you've raised with yourself in terms of what you were going to do homework on, but at least you also get a sense of what's coming up here. As I indicated, everybody's welcome. I will give preference to members of Parliament, but if you guys want to contribute, we will also recognize you. Everyone wants to speak. Let's start with Max, Sel, Mama, and Gwena, Ezra, Vincent Makagula, and Abraham. Start for us to start debating really these matters as opposed to asking questions. Let's start with Mr. Max.
Thank you, Chair. This independence of the perceived a non-independent, or as Mr. Padiyaki stated, that independence has been compromised. So you get this structural independence in a decision which is supposed to be independent. I think if I could take from what was said, it seems to me that the focus here is based on the structural compromising of independence, because they are depending on, their resources are dependent on the department, and not necessarily the decision-making function. But say, I don't think that might be, but it also is perceived that as a result of the structural non-independence, it influenced the decision-making process. So I don't know really whether there's any substance to this particular point or not. The other point is that with regard to that Emily Keynes, the input, the perceived perception by inmates that the ICC, this is not independent. It seems to me there is a lack. It is, that point comes from, or there's an inference drawn that the inmates are not properly educated around this particular issue. Informed, the lack of communication, whether it is now from the ICCV, or whether it is the duty of the DCS to, one, get into the center that they educate them about all the institutions which they are to deal with. So I think on that, if that is the case, there should be education with regards to that. With regards to Mr. Bullard's input, she's concerned about the fact that no one was criminally charged of the department, some of the officials, for death of prisoners. I would love to have clarity about it. Should somebody be charged if there's no evidence, or, you know, I don't understand the point of concern. Because if somebody is found to the cause of their death, obviously there will be prosecution, or is it a lack of it. And similarly, with regards to your point, one of the points which you raised, whether the department should investigate, or the police, or just whoever. You know, this investigation is twofold. The one is a criminal investigation, which purely rests with just on recommendations with facts in cooperation with facts. But the department could also, at the same time, a responsibility to internally investigate it. So the views right here about just DCS involvement, I just want clarity what is the concern, because the DCS has to investigate to determine whether their members acted, you know, outside the confines of regulations and the law to take preventative action. And also, if the person is being suspended, as requested in the recommendation of Ms. Blunt, then within 60 days, in terms of rules, you know, collective agreements, those suspended either have to be uplifted or the hearing should be finalized. So you can't suspend on one side and say, it depends on the investigation on the other end. So there's a both, but the two investigations are totally independent. The one is administrative, the one is criminal. So the inspector's mandate, say, it is a concern. And I was, since I got involved in this thing, and when we visited outside and when we got reports from just then, and I raised it a couple of times, that just is doing an inspection, you know, from light, from water, from toilets, from bricks, or whatever the case may be, until they report on these things. And I was also contemplating and considering these responsibilities, because it's used, it is a broad thing, a shotgun approach, instead of a focused approach. But I think what justifies it is because the lack of those buildings or the infrastructure contributes to this violation of human rights. And it's difficult to ignore one in favor of the other one. Because if you take into account, if the toilet isn't working, you know, it violates. If the lights are not working, it violates. So it is something we really need to be discussed and interrogated properly. Here from my side for now, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd really like to focus on three interrelated things. The first is the whole question of independence. And while I can see that there is a very great need for the projects to be administratively and financially independent, it does come at a price. And that is that if you set up a separate act and a separate administration, a separate budget allocation, then it comes with its own administrative burden in terms of PFMA compliance, in terms of reporting to the Auditor General, in terms of appearing before SCOPA, in terms of all the other things that goes with having a separate budget. That brings me to the second problem, and that seems to be one of capacity. And it goes to your point of the broad or the narrow mandate. Because at the moment the mandate is so broad that really one wonders, even with massive injections of staff and resources and so on, whether they get round to doing all the things we want them to do. And I concede that, you know, in a perfect world they would do all the things that we want them to do. It's just that, you know, how big are we going to make this machine in order to get them to do what we want them to do? And, you know, one looks at the best case scenario. Claire mentioned it, the IFID Act and procedures, but the IFID was before a committee of Parliament the other day, and they didn't have a stunning record of investigations and so on. I mean, I think one in sort of 250 they finally got around to doing some investigations into it. So I think simply changing the Act or simply changing the structure isn't necessarily going to be a panacea for getting the results at the end of the day. So I think we've got to be realistic in terms of what we want to achieve. If you like, do a hierarchy of things that we think are most important through to those that are least important, empower and capacitate the JICs to achieve that descending hierarchy of needs, and then make sure that they have the resources to be able to do them and hold them accountable for the production of those results. The third interrelated aspect goes to the relationship between JICs and the Department of Correctional Services. Now, it's a sort of Janus-type relationship, you know, smiley and frowny at the same time. Because in order to do what they need to do, particularly in visitor committees and so on, they've got to be a smiley face to prison management, because otherwise they're going to find themselves in a situation where they can't do the job. On the other side, the frowny face is when they go and do an inspection and they discover that people have been doing wrong things and killing people, torturing people, and so on and so forth. Now, I don't know how you overcome that relationship problem unless you split the two functions and you say, okay, there's going to be an ICTV arm, and that's going to do its thing in some sort of a structure, and there's quite separately going to be a complaint and inspectorate type function that will move in when things start going wrong. Obviously, the downside of that is that in an ideal world, the ICCD should be feeding into the inspectorate and the other way around. So this is a dilemma that I don't think I've got my head around quite yet. But I think it's something that the department and ourselves we need to debate. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the great presentation. Chairperson, I want to talk about the ignoring of the inspecting task. But we need to get a respond from the department, because this thing is coming now and again that they are ignored in terms of their complaints, and no one is taking care of that. For example, Chair, last week we were talking about ICCV. Whereby they were coming in front of the committee to share with us their frustration. And there was a complaint in terms of post-mo on the kitchen. And Chair, I make an unannounced visit the following day. And also find Chairperson is not say the kitchen where dirty as the ICCV was reporting. The challenge there is that they've got four kitchens. And out of these four kitchens, is only one kitchen that's operating. And the three of these kitchens, they are renovating. And no one told us that. Then all these trays that were dirty is the trays that was dishing food for supper. Because of one kitchen, then these three kitchens, trays, are not washed afternoon. They wash it in the morning. So that's why Cosmo is taking. So I'm saying this, Chair, because we're talking about the responsibility of the ICCV and the restructuring of their work. That what really do we want to achieve in terms of their monitoring in our center? And when you're listening to the reports, all of them, it shows that there's a lot of work on ICCV. And at the very same time, they are not getting salary. They are getting stipends. And there's no formulation of what a focus demands. They are doing everything. On that one, Chair, I would recommend that because never had chance as this committee to go outside and have an experience as a Onico that coming from Canada, UK, that what is other places doing to conquer the challenges that we are facing or the inspection that is facing. I recommend that maybe we need a workshop because now it looks like we are from 1994. We are starting Babusha. If you look at this case, we've got the setting judge, we've got ICCVs, but we don't have a plan for them. But what is really is that they must do. We are occupying work for them with a plan that is not clear. Maybe that workshop will assist all of us and stakeholders to formulate the way they must report, as Ms. Self is saying, that maybe some of them they must focus on looking at the sexual abuse, those rapes and all that. Because even ourselves when we go to oversight capacity, when we find these cases of sexual abuse in the hospital on our center, it's shocking us. And ourselves, we don't know what to do, because the department cannot even tell us how many members that have been arrested on this issue or how many inmates that are abusing other inmates that have been arrested. It is just a normal thing in our center. This thing of sexual abuse goes with this thing. All under that. And still, we don't have a way of how to solve this problem. And we're leaving all this work to ICCV to give us this information. And after, what are we doing about it? Because this is not anything. We got these stories every day. We don't have a solution of this. In terms of the independent on the budget, I think also, Chair, it's a challenge. We're saying in certain judge is the independent. But in terms of the resource that depending on the department. And Chair, we did see this challenge last term. Whereby the inspecting judge didn't get his salary. He had to bear his salary also. But this person is independent. So I don't know what do we mean about that. I think that we need to have a holy officer. That the inspecting judge must have its own budget, not if it depends on the budget that is gated by the department, so that they can account themselves on their own in their budget. And I talk about formulation of how much they work. The song spoke more about prison rape, sexual abuse, and assault. And Chair, I think also department also they must try to give up an explanation, because there's inmates that is assault by the members, there's members that has been assault by the inmate, and we don't have a report there in terms of those cases. What is happening about those cases? There's a challenge again, Chairperson, on ICCV's report back to the inmate. I think also that one also fall under the restructuring of their work. When we go to oversight, we'll find the inmate said, I did report my case to the ICCV. But the challenge that they've got, there's no report that is coming back to them on what they've been reported. Same apply even in our members in our center. You'll find the inmate said, I've raised my complaint or last step, but no one came back and tell me what is happening. Most of them are saying about when they apply for transfers, besides transfers, I'm not capable, the cases, parole, they don't get a response. I don't know how the department is making. Maybe we need to get a clarity on that one, because I used to ask this question. No one is answering me. You know, care on the time of apartheid, the inmate will be asked the class to the ward that is working there and take it to the head of the center. Within 7 days, Chair, you'll get your report. For example, Chair, I was arrested in the time of the apartheid. I was sentenced 10 years. But Chairperson, when my child gets passed away, I make an application to go and see to bury my child, because it was the time of the apartheid. They didn't allow me to go and bury my child. But I did get a report immediately to say you are not going to get that. We will have to reapply, and the reply is going to come back after 6 months. Therefore, it tells you as an inmate that what you want to do, you are not going to do it immediately. But now we are in power. You'll find that an inmate is reporting something that can be answered the following day. But you find that there's no report back to the inmate to report to the inmate. Maybe care, that's why it was like having inmates that are coming in and out in our center, because there's no thoroughly rehabilitation on them. We've got budget to rehabilitate them, but they're not rehabilitated because they come out with this anger. Instead of a pretext, this management anger is not treated, because the more you don't come back with a report back to the inmate, that inmate, how are you going to finish the anger on him? It won't happen. It is part of rehabilitation to respond immediately. Then the anger of the inmate then goes down. So that's why I said there's a lot of things that need to be done in our center, and a lot of questions need to be asked the department. I don't think that we can ask the presenters of this report the questions. My questions, a lot of questions that I want to ask is that the questions is on the department. What are they doing to make this department work effectively? Because when you check this report, there's a lot of challenges that is inside, on this report. In terms of power of investigating, also, if Tabanda are Kangai, but we must investigate one of them. What do we make of this? We need to look at that and try to change that. Maybe that's why you don't get this report of assault and whatever, because you are allowing themselves also to do those investigations on what they are doing inside in our center. Thank you, Chetan.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Chair. Chetan, last week, if you remember, we asked the inspecting judge, Mr. Karamsa, that do you have teeth? The answer was no. But we didn't proceed and said, what are you using? Are you using false or you are working without the teeth? indeed, we cannot afford to strengthen the expecting judge while they are working mainly with volunteers. Then really, according to me, we cannot afford to strengthen giving them every power, fund them while they are working with the volunteers. I think there's some other things that we have to look if we want to strengthen them. They must be pure strengthened, not this. Because we'll keep on speaking of strengthening, because really they are working with the volunteers. Actually, maybe they are not part of puzzle. The people that are working with them, they don't have these in the best part. And then how can we come to strengthen them? And they are many, and they are all over the country. And the inspecting judge is working with them on a daily basis. So really, as government, as parliament, we cannot afford. We have to do something else. I hear from the CSP, RI, yes, how do you do? You say in England and Wales, Her Majesty, Chief Inspector of the Prison, is responsible for the inspecting of the prison and publishing reports. Where are these reports submitted to? That is my first question. Where is submit this report? And does the inspectorate of the prison have the power to enforce the recommendation? Vanessa, I don't see Vanessa now. Is it okay? Vanessa, you submit that also talks about the human resource for ICCV. Does NICRO believe that an increase in the number of the ICCV will increase confidence of the offenders in the ICCV complaint system? That is the question. No, Jefferson, I may want that question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Leonardo. Very long, Jefferson. Jefferson, I firstly want to thank the presenters, all three groups, for the presentation. I think one of the most important elements in order to make democracy work and thrive is a very strong civil society involvement. Otherwise, the powers that be will ride roughshod. Chairperson, think what is important is that the presentations are focusing on various shortcomings as they perceive it in the current system. And in order to move forward, I think it would be prudent if one looks on the one hand at international best practice, and there has been evidence produced here about the success thereof in those countries where it's been practiced. And furthermore, Chair, that we should actually give the office of the infecting judge the opportunity to react in writing to the numerous challenges that are highlighted in these three papers, presentations. Chairperson, likewise, the Department of Correctional Services should also be given the opportunity to present a paper on the challenges that have been highlighted, as well as the challenges that they themselves see being at the coalface of delivery. And then, Chairperson, all these various ideas should be presented to the committee. The committee should then go through these thoroughly, perhaps even have it researched, and come up with proposals that could move us onto a new trajectory. Now, Chairperson, one must always bear in mind that we need to align whatever we wish to do with constitutional prescripts. We cannot go beyond that. We cannot go outside of that. And our constitution gives us the basis of what should be done. And what one reads with regard to a lot of the observations that civil society has made is that everything is not well in the state of Denmark. And in order to clean up this chamois here, it will need a great deal of, you might have to trample on toes to get this sort of thing cleaned up. But it has to be done here, and one will have to take whatever risks there may be. But, Chair, if you take risks and you take informed and calculated risks, you should be able to win at the end of the day. You know, human nature is such, Chair, that we all strive for excellence. We all strive for perfection, knowing full well that it's very difficult to reach it. But we must try and get as close to that goal of perfection and excellence as possible. And the human being is equipped, Chairperson, to make either a success of something or to destroy something. You know, wars are sanctioned by human beings, and they destroy things, and there are those that build, and they build beautiful edifices, and they build beautiful futures. So, Chairperson, when I say constitutional prescripts, naturally, it is our bounden duty, Chair, to see that those that are entrusted, I think it is Gandhi that said that you are judged by the manner in which you treat the weak and the vulnerable if you are in power and if you exercise power. And that is what we are supposed to be doing here, Chair. Chair, when we visit centers, I'm the first one to say, I wouldn't like my worst enemy to be confined to some of the circumstances that you see there, the conditions that you see there, the overcrowding that you see there, the complaints that you hear from fellow beings. Now, Chairperson, yes, there is sometimes a conflict of interest. The ICCVs are wholly dependent on the goodwill of the officials at DCS. And this should not be so. an ICCV should be in a position to be able to access a center and to be given the necessary support to carry out his or her function. On the other hand, Chair, I've heard some inmates saying, you know, that guy there, he comes here, he's bought out, man, he'll do nothing for us. So there is that sort of lack of confidence, Chairperson, amongst the inmates. And that needs to be restored. Confidence needs to be restored. Otherwise, Chairperson, we are going to face major problems. But Chairperson, what I mean, it is nice to listen to all the problems and all the challenges. But I would love to hear also, why is it that the fabric of our society is tearing apart? Why is it that many of these people that find their way into these centers are reasonably intelligent people that could have made a difference to society? And although it is not the function of correctional services to look at that aspect, it is a receiving department. One needs to find out downstream, why are we receiving people who should have been contributors for the benefit and the good of society. So, Chairperson, this would be my humble little contribution, but you know, when it is reported, and I have no reason to doubt the veracity thereof, some people out there think that some appointments of these independent visitors are politically motivated. I think, Jefferson, that this is the kind of service where politics and race should be left completely out of it. It should be done purely on the basis of the ability of a person, the independence of a person to do a particular job, irrespective of what the person's political affiliation is. Because inmates that are there, Chair, come from broad society. They are our people. They come from amongst us. And it is our duty, Chair, to try and see that we get them out of those services as better human beings. Unfortunately, Chair, one gets the impression. I mean, I spoke to one inmate once, and the guy tells me, "Ma manier is beter om hier in die tjoekies te wees wat ek kry drie maaltye 'n dag hier." When I'm outside there, niemand wil vir my 'n job gee nie. Niemand wil vir my 'n dak oor my kop gee nie. Ek moet hier onder die brug gaan slaap, ek moet in die bosse gaan slaap. Ek gaan doen weer 'n bietjie verkeerd dat ek terug kan kom tjoekies toe. But that kind of syndrome, Chair, we need to do something as broad society to change. And unless we do that, Chair, the problems that we say here will compound. They will not reduce. We need to look at ways and means of how these things can be reduced. Can we make those people that are inside there involved in doing something which they can employ when they are out of those services? And there's another aspect there, although it has nothing to do with the subject under discussion, where we are paying very little attention to. I mean, the services, we've told them time and again, if it's budgets, it's social. If it's a question of getting the necessary training material in the form of human beings, can train people in various vocations, social. Otherwise, Chair, we should not call them correctional centers. They are prison warehouses. And we need to change that kind of psyche. And we need to be serious about it. And we need to have an action plan, a war plan, Chair. Our country is at war as far as crime is concerned. It is running rampant. The other day a parliamentarian was followed from the airport and hijacked near a filling station. Thank God. Otherwise they would have followed him right into his house and probably done something evil to the family. So this sort of thing, Jefferson, and these are the type of people that end up in our services. And we are not doing enough, Chair, to make them better human beings, to get them out of there, people that can be reintegrated into society and become useful members of our society. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Turner.
No, thanks for the presentation, and also honorable upon the recovered me partly. But I wanted us to address ourselves on the issue of the curriculum of our officials. Where are we insofar as improving the curriculum so as to address the issue of conduct, behavior, and attitude? I think that's where we should start. We must know where are we. If we deal with that, we'll go along with them. So let's comment.
Thank you, sir. Can I also add my voice by thanking the presenters from the civil society? My take on this matter is that I've heard the honorable self saying that having an act for the projects, it may be inconveniencing some of the operations, but to me, I feel my view is that why don't you have an act which will separate the operation of KICS from the CPSC? You know, sir, this one actually, I would say, it's a very complex matter. You know, having this presentation, which will contribute in terms of formulation of such an act, will alleviate so many problems. Because, you know, if you can remember, we've been seeing many a time that it's a conflict of interest. Having JICS working under the Department of Correctional Services. Because they depend from them financially. Now, me and you are aware that if you want to sabotage a person, you must deprive him resources or deprive them resources. Now, what will happen if JICS is deprived the resources to implement functions? Surely, people will get away with murder. Now, you say if there is an act, standalone act, where JICS operates under that act, it gives them sufficient powers. You know, it's also confusing that because they are bound to Parliament direct. Why can't they have their own act which binds them or binds everybody so that they are able to... This recommendation, sir, are not the first time we hear that. You remember last year or early this year, they were presented. And why are they not implemented? It's a question to ask. Because surely the intention is to make our centers contribute for rehabilitation of our inmates. But if these recommendations are not done, surely maybe they are trembling on other people's toes. You can end up saying that because looking at what is presented here, if you want to argue, present your argument and say, no, this is not correct, this is not true, this is, you know. People are presenting this thing and having evidence to support what they are saying. So if you want to come up and say, no, this is not correct, present another side of the argument, you know, for us to make a informed decision when we have to make a decision. But fairly speaking, okay, let judicial inspectorate inspecting. Is it justice? Let me call it JICS because it's easy for me to call it JICS. Let them be independent, very independent. Independent. This word independent, it must mean independent. It must not be partially independent. At the moment, they are partially independent. That's my little contribution.
Thank you very much, Jumeta. When I open it up for members and I ask that they don't direct their questions to you, I said that because I really think that as members of parliament, we are slowly outsourcing our duty to think. You know, when we stand and we say, let's ask experts why, for instance, the issue is raised by Premier Abram, I really think we run the danger of outsourcing our ability to think. And that is why my own view is in support of what I think I'm going to say earlier on. I really think what we should do is to arrange a workshop where you can come and represent your cases, where DCS can come, as Munir Abram was saying, come and put your case on the table. But at the end of the day, with all these things that have been presented, Mr. Nguni, then take that informed decision that you are talking about. I really think we should go that route, personally. So it was not, I didn't want you to answer, but I'm just getting a sense that as members of parliament, we are beginning to rely on being spoon-fed everything. I don't want Nicro to come and give me the solutions to what I should be doing. I need Nicro to come and empower me. But there were questions posed to yourself. You can respond to them. Alternatively, if we agree, I think the committee should be considering having this workshop ongoing. With the inspecting that, with the department, with all the stakeholders, and for us to answer these questions. So that just Guga Savalala, by the time you do your stress plan, it must be informed by something. Currently the stress plan is not informed. You are doing everything, your structure as a self is saying, is not capacitated for doing everything. Let us have a workshop, begin to develop that threat plan by prioritizing what we think you should be doing. Go to the organogram about whether it is correct to have an organogram that is filled out with volunteers or if we have real employed people in it. I just think that's what we should be doing, because otherwise we are really just talking for talking's sake. And I agree, Mam Gwenya, we can't continue to have this thing forever. So you can respond if you want to respond. But my firm proposal is that let us have a workshop where everybody puts his case and defends his or her case, so that the inspecting judge is not expected to do things that you are doomed to fail. I said last week you are doomed to fail if you've got 214 ICCVs for 160,000. You are doomed to fail. And if we continue to do that, I don't know how we expect to get different results at the end of it. So I will allow you guys to respond very briefly. We'll break for tea and we'll come back to the second part, which is your input or response inspection. But if you want to respond, you can respond. My own take, members, is that let us call a proper workshop and come up with a resolution of sorts, whether it is standalone, whether it is strengthening, whether it is whatever. And we will invite all of you back. We'll invite the inspecting judge to come and do his or her thing. We'll invite you, Mr. Modise, to come and do your thing. And ultimately, we will then take a decision in terms of what we resolve out of the meeting. I think that's the way to go, to settle this matter once and for all. But if there are different views, you can raise them. I know that there were some questions to you, Vanessa. I think there were some also to you, Claire. And I'm not sure if there were any to yourself. But if you want to respond, in fact, let me give all of you a short time just to make closing remarks, and then we will close this chapter and we'll move on to the next. Let's maybe start with those that were the last to present, that side, and then we'll come to Claire and Vanessa, and we'll close off. If there's anything, if you don't have anything to say, then it's fine. We'll close it and then we'll move over to the second part of our discussion.
Okay. Thank you very much, and I think we would strongly agree with the proposal for the workshop going forward, and perhaps also to invite the NGA and staff to that. Could be a really important, as really important role player in the process. And just thank you again for the opportunity to be here and for focusing on this issue.
Briefly, thank you, Chair. Mr. Matthew, you raised a couple of questions about investigative proceedings. Our submission, and I think this is correct, is that the GPS internal investigation for internal and administrative persons or disciplinary or suspension or stuff should necessarily wait until the criminal part has been done. Simply because be one of their members implicated in an assault or death or their oversight, their protective function have been compromised by the inmate on inmate assault, they will be implicated in a criminal investigation. And with bodies in assault, there is always evidence. And it's important that staff does that investigate and all the judicial inspectors or whoever it should be, but it should always be from our side. And the DCS investigation should absolutely be suspended until that third criminal part has been completed. The investigative or internal processes or lab processes or whatever can never supersede the criminal investigation. And that is, again, supported by the UN principles of independent investigation through the annex to our submission. Mr. Dalton Mangwenya, I'm going to quickly respond to you. Mr. Dalton, you raised the question of an administrative burden, albeit to make the machine and so on. Nature of budget, changing its structure. I think the starting point is the legislation. So there's a change that the Section 85 speaks about the report, JICS having a inspection and reporting function. Section 90 talks about it being able to deal with any complaint. That's confusing. It doesn't necessarily put it as a reporting institution or investigative one. I need to sort that out. Either panel beating the legislation we already have or creating a new one, I don't think it matters. From there, you decide whether a new self-planning structure would be important. I don't think it necessarily is absolutely necessary to ensure its independence. So, for example, you could get a department from the executive in DCF in a way which the legislation stipulates satisfies the inspecting judge that is independent, the independence of the judge is remains. So I don't think we need to necessarily go for the self-standing route, even though it is one way. I think that the important part is to establish what we want and have the legislation reflect that adequately. On the smiling, frowning thing and the nature, I don't think it matters. I don't think the nature of the institution will make a difference regarding how it is received by DCS at a point of investigation or entry into prison. I think what matters is that when the role of justice is compromised by DCS, the sanctions rain down thick and fast. I think that is the way to prevent the army part, not by changing the structure. I don't really think that has any relevance. I think what's important is that, I could add that requires that all state departments assist in establishing and maintaining independence, I think, is the language of the artist. Similarly, we should have that, and when that is compromised by a state institution, there's a consequence. That's it.
I think the first question was Mr. Max about asking the link between structural independence and decision-making. And I think we've started the discussion around the different act possibly for JICS, and it goes together with more powers, I suppose, and it's being taken more seriously as an independent organization. And it obviously impacts on decision-making and recommendations, and also to legislate certain things that will allow to impact more positively in the decision-making process. With regard to Rukula, they talked about the ITCVs and if we want more, I think if we're not going to address what the structural, the problems are currently with ICCVs, we wouldn't recommend increasing them. Although, yes, we are aware they're overburdened and that 850 to 1 is a bit of an impossible situation. So it is an immediate issue that needs to be given some attention. But there's two options. Either we increase the amount of time they spend, or at the same time, I mean, it's still going to take care of the issue of 850 to 1 ICCVs. So, yeah, I think one is caught in a bind. I think after the workshop, maybe it would be a bit more clear around that, how that system is going to be structured. With regards, we also support, I would think, the workshop to look at more detail around issues of independence and how that works. We understand Mr. South's concern that these issues would mean more costs, but Mr. South, I don't think we can carry on spending on something it's not working properly as well. So we can carry on spending these millions and keeping the JIC under the perceived independence and where the ICCV system is not working as effectively. And I think it's over the long run, it's not worth the investment and compromises oversight. And we want to get it right. And often it means on the front end, we're going to have to reprioritize our budgets and how we're going to allocate it. So we're really serious about oversight and getting it right, then we're going to have to invest in it. So I think that's an issue there. And and we're supporting the independent as well. But I think overall, only with one other question in the UK, who does the inspector report, they're appointed by the Ministry of Justice and Home Secretary and the Minister. So I'm not sure what equivalent that is to South Africa. I assume it's at a parliamentary level, but I'm not concerned about that.
Right, just to set the record straight because our friends from the media and everybody else is here. What we were doing today was brainstorming. So there is no decision for a standalone act as an example. It's part of input that we think members must and stakeholders must go and think about as various options that we have. I mean, it would be a sad day if we send the wrong message and raise expectations that are not going to be achieved. All this was about information gathering, and we think we should mull over these things, and that is why I said that I think it should culminate in a workshop where solutions can be taken. So I would hate someone to go and say the inspecting judge is going to be a standalone with his own budget reporting somewhere else, or the inspecting judge must be appointed by the president and not as a minister, when we have not even looked at all the implications that Mr. Self was talking about. I want to reiterate, these were all issues that will be put on an agenda for us to reach resolution on at some point. I'm hoping that those that are recording it capture it in that action, because it really is not about taking final decisions, but it was a brainstorming session that will culminate in a workshop that will afford all stakeholders an opportunity. The inspecting judge has commented on it, DCS has not commented on it, and it would be unfair then to reach some sort of, or the ministry as well has not commented, to reach some sort of a conclusion without everybody having put his or her thought on the table and then we take it from there. I thought it was important to say that. But thank you very much. It was very useful. You probably would be invited to a kind of workshop session with this as a basis, and as we go along we can improve it. We're not sure of the time frames, but for us sooner rather than later. As I said, it would be helpful, especially that if this thing can be done as part of the build-up to your threat plan and budget proposals going forward. So we will try and do that as soon as possible to assist all of us. Thank you very much. We might allow you guys, if you want to leave. If not, can we have a two-minute break, and then we'll ask the inspecting judge and his team to answer two questions. I'm not sure if members need a two-minute biological break, or can we move directly into the second part of it? Move and finish. Everybody's strong enough for that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Inspecting judge, before you arrive, we reminded your team on just two issues that we had discussed last week that we thought we should give you some time to maybe consider and come back and it'll also help this workshop of ours. The one was, and I think we've touched this, members have touched this here, was the ideal Ogelka, both in terms of ratio of ICCVs to inmates, but the more we talk about it, the entire structure, whether it's the volunteers, whether you're going to be guilty of being top heavy, because I think we don't need too many people at head office, we need many people in the field. So when you come into organogram at any point, understand that we will ask that question, because I don't think we need a inspector that is sitting at head office. We need an inspector in the field. So if you've only got 214 ICCVs and 500 office-based people, we might question. So, I mean, that was what we were talking about. Currently, as I said, rough sums show that it's 1 to 750 units. And the second part that they asked you to do is to present us with a list of your ICCVs who are currently serving parole. There seems to be support from at least one input. We just want that so that we are able to monitor and satisfy ourselves. All ICCVs that are currently still serving parole. And then finally, inspecting that I'm not sure if circumstances or events have overtaken us, because we'd ask you to come and share with us some of the footballs as you see them. But if you're going to go to a workshop
they can even be postponed to that workshop. But we will allow the opportunity to comment even on what you heard here today. And Mr. Modise, if there is anything that you would want to, we also allow you to comment for a few minutes. But let's start with the two particular questions. List of parolees, is it available? And then secondly, your ideal organogram in terms of duration.
Honourable chair members, currently there's only two RCTVs serving currently that still has and still under community supervision. That is Mr. Nabin. Only two. Okay. We only have two currently. The one started in 2009, its contract coming to an end, and one started now recently in October. The second one is, we reported last week 214, but it is actually 216 posts that is filled. That is an accurate number. And we also reported last week that one of our challenges is the percentage of vacancies, RTTV vacancies. In fact, there must be 304 RTTVs, which brings the ratio to 1 to 500. Which we still think is a challenge, specifically at children, juveniles, females, and remand detention centers. That ratio is still too high. That is the current situation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have any comments to make. Fair to say that the concluding paragraph of the submission from us, which was addressed to you, was that what is necessary in this whole thing is that we must involve the TCS. At the moment, we are busy talking to ourselves. The TCS is not involved. They are the people who are directly involved with us. And they are the people who hold authority over us. So I support the question of a workshop to include the TCS. And in addition, as the other lady said, in addition to invite the police and the prosecution, because all of these things are interrelated. So once we can get the views of all these people, then probably can come up with something. We did mention last time the question of reviewing legislation. But again, it's good to say so, but I think it needs more input. You know, not just a broad statement, more input as to what would be the purpose of the legislation, what would it encompass, you know, things like that. Now, the civil society groups have mentioned that the appointment of an inspecting judge is not satisfactory. In other words, that the minister appoints an inspecting judge. It's true. And the extent to which the inspecting judge is involved in these things, he's a temporary person who was about for 3 years. And after 3 years, he's gone. Then somebody else comes in. My predecessor actually was not happy about leaving. He was keen to continue. In fact, he told me. He said, you'd have loved to continue, but you are still that your contract is finished, you must go. This Shabalala is a new person who appointed you for 3 years. After 3 years, he'll go. So all that is not satisfaction. You know, as an inspecting judge, I would require or need to represent it in the sense that I've been appointed because people think that there's something in me which should add value to the position, not just because I'm a retired judge. there was a study in me which says that I'm capable of doing the job, I've got the attributes to do the job, and so on. So I think the appointment needs to be gone into. Now all these things, they can only be discussed at the time when we're having a workshop. The question of prosecutions and so on, they all come in, and the magistrates or the judges, where a person is dead and there's stupid inquiry. There's a book, Chair, which has been written by George Bezos, which is entitled No One Is to Blame. This book arose because of Steve Biko. Prior to the what's this now? To the I'm just missing you. What's this name? The investigation. TRC. Prior to the TRC. I was just forgetting that. That's what I wanted to mention. It only came out at that time, the actual truth, what actually happened. But there was an investigation by the magistrate to find out at an inquest what was the cause of Steve Biko's death. But the end of that inquest was to say there's no one to blame. That's a sort of stereotype phrase used by magistrate, or it's in the act actually. You must say whether there's somebody to blame or no one to blame. So George Bezos wrote a book on that. That illustrates that this is an old problem. All these difficulties have been there for years. If we can come to a meeting together, all of us, all the parties, have an in-depth discussion, including the DCS and other involved people, probably could come with something more positive, something which could be tangible and which you yourselves as a committee can take to Parliament. And when you do, you'll be strengthened and it will have some punch in it. So I think that's all I'd like to say. I think the papers which have been delivered by the civil society groups is very important. And they've done research on this issue, and I think we can work on that, you know, at a forum where all the parties are there. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thanks for the opportunity to maybe just say one or two. I think from our side, we appreciate the friendliness of the presentations, and what we will do is, as a department, we'll look into what is contained and prepare a response in this regard. But however, one would like to hasten to add that much as a lot of work has gone into it, there is one aspect that lacks is that the South African and African perspective as to the situation is not coming out. And I think from our side we really emphasize that angle. But also I think Chairperson, what is very crucial would be to look at the situation before the Commission of Inquiry of Judge Thabani Jali, as well as the conditions thereafter. That can provide also as to where recommendations that have been made by Judge Jali, by the then inspecting judges of prisons, as well as up until Judge Vuka Tshabalala, what has then been happening in correctional services. And then lastly, I think There's one aspect that really makes it difficult is the levels of overcrowding in our correctional facilities. And I think that aspect will also have to come really forward, because when you look at your facilities that are not overcrowded, situations are very different to where you have a facility that is overcrowded as your Baltimore, your Westville, your Pretoria, Johannesburg, and so forth. I think that would assist the route that the chairperson has suggested of a workshop. And I think as we come to that, having done that kind of research and homework, I think we'll add more value to what would then be the outcomes of the workshop. And then maybe, and just to say that the inspecting judge inclusion in the Correctional Services Act is legislation which is largely the responsibility of Parliament. And I think if we would then assist by coming forward with suggested amendments to the Act that indicates what the purpose would be, I think we'll be assisting those that had to take that decision of amending the Act. I think that
thank you very much to everybody. My closing remark is that just to remind everybody that everything we are doing flows from Section 35(2)(e), I think it is, of the Constitution, that talks about everybody that is detained or every accused person, including sentenced prisons, have the right to conditions of human dignity and so on. I think that is what informs us, that including the overcrowding, we have to answer that question, that does it describe or does it advance that constitutional idea of everybody, including sentenced inmates, being guaranteed human dignity and so on. So that is really what drives us. It's not personal, it's not us against you, it's about ensuring that the constitution that everybody celebrates is not just a paper exercise, but where it is possible, this committee will try and implement it. We are seeing the inspecting judge next week, I think, in terms of his quarterly report, so we meet on Wednesday. There will also be at least 3 or 4 sets of minutes that you will have received by that time, so we are going to set aside at least half an hour just to catch up with our minutes. We slightly behind at our minutes, so after the inspecting judge's input, we will deal with minutes as a committee. And the week thereafter, I think it is you, Mr. Modise, and the department for your quarterly report.
Yes.
Legal Aid Board and then yourself. And it's Legal Aid Board and then yourself. So we keep inspecting judge next week. Legal Aid Board the week thereafter. No? Yes, I'm saying inspecting judge and minutes. Legal Aid Board, you and I, Advocate Mac, are in the firing line for things we said or didn't really make it. And then after the department. So those are the 3. Thank you very much once again. We will keep you informed in terms of future planning. And as is always the case, you are free to interact with us through Cindy at any point. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
Are you there with them?